What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Our Lives in Medicine, or should I say, welcome back to Our Lives in Medicine. I've been on a bit of a hiatus due to transferring residency programs, but we're back. We are back. If you're interested in what sparked the transfer, check out the solo episode, which details the process. Anyway, I am so happy to be back. I'm so happy to share this episode with you, and so happy to get the family back together. This episode features Dr. Nicolette Finger, DO. She's a second year physical medicine and rehabilitation, aka PMNR resident. And this is not her first rodeo on Our Lives in Medicine. She is a veteran, and this is a catch-up episode to see where are they now. So check out this episode and learn about her life as a resident, learn about the field of PMNR. I really hope you enjoy. By the way, help support and grow the family by sharing episodes, by liking, commenting on episodes on whatever listening platform you use, and please follow us on Instagram at Our Lives in Medicine. When you do, check the link in the bio for other ways to engage with the family. Much love to everyone, and as always, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you. This is Dr. Nicolette Finger, back for a second time. So excited to have you back. How's life?
Life is great. It's been a while. It's like been almost 2 years since we've chatted.
I think we were just lowly med students when we first talked, right?
We were. We were preparing for residency.
Quote unquote preparing.
Yeah. Hanging out.
Yeah, hanging out. Fourth year was pretty much a joke with COVID and just in general. So I wasn't prepared.
yeah. I don't think you can really prepare for residency. So we were just enjoying our last little bit.
I definitely enjoyed the end. Well, pretty much all of fourth year, even before COVID, I was having a good time.
But me too.
Yeah, it was definitely nice once COVID hit because I was just home, like home with my mom.
Same. I was though I was quarantined in 650 square feet with my now husband. So. At least, you know, that didn't break us up or anything.
I was going to say, at least, like, it worked out in that sense.
Yeah.
Because that could have been a nightmare.
Exactly.
But it worked out. It worked out. So you're a PGY2 now, right?
Yes. Finishing up my PGY2 year in physical medicine and rehabilitation.
And for anyone who doesn't know, PGY is basically just the year of residency in which someone's in. So she's a second year resident physician in PMNR, right?
Correct. PMNR, also called physiatry.
Physiatry. That TikTok you did the other day, what was it? What did the doctor call PMNR?
Plenty money and relaxation.
Yeah, that's right. It should be the prode specialty instead of the road specialties.
Oh, yes, exactly. Because PMNR needs to be in there. We have got a great lifestyle.
Well, you don't want people hopping on that train, so don't tell too many people.
That's true. And we also don't want people coming to the specialty just for that. You know, we want people who love PMNR and value quality of life for our patients, you know, as well. So,
yeah. If you want to just relax, go into general surgery.
Totally. Totally. That's the move.
Yeah.
Any add pre-meds? That to the road yeah, to
any,
happiness.
Any pre-meds listening, if you want an easy life, go into general surgery. Yeah. So PGY2, second year, PMNR, mm-hmm. How is it overall? Is it what you expected?
So I would say it's different than what I expected, but it's exceeded my expectations in ways that I wouldn't have thought of. My PGY2 is a lot more inpatient heavy. And so when I first was interested in PM&R, I thought I wanted to go into outpatient. And second year of residency has kind of showed me that I love inpatient rehab. And so in many ways, it's not at all what I expected, but so much better.
What's the draw for inpatient? Like, what's a day in the life of an inpatient resident versus like a attending at a non-academic center?
So inpatient rehab, the flow of the day is pretty similar to inpatient medicine. So you start off the day rounding on all of your patients. You know, at least in residency setting, you would discuss with your attending. Of course, if you're the attending, then you just do your thing. And then you act on that plan. And then the rest of the day is admissions and discharges. So it's very similar to inpatient medicine. It's just what we're focused on is different. We're obviously focused more on the rehab, though we do a ton of medicine, management of our patients' comorbidities and new issues that have come up. You know, maybe they just got a liver transplant or a lung transplant or an amputation, neurosurgery, you know, had a brain injury or a spinal cord injury. So we're dealing with the acute disease process as well. But it's, you know, your patients are a lot more sick than in the outpatient world. And so they need to be inpatient. They need your attention. And they need care 24/7 during their, you know, 1 to 2 weeks in inpatient. And so I find a lot of satisfaction in how quickly you can see improvement and progress versus on the outpatient side, you know, just like any other field, every visit, you're going to be kind of waiting months to years in between to kind of see any progress. So it's just that satisfaction, I think, of seeing improvement every single day that I love.
Nice. Yeah, that's really good. Is there an opportunity to do like a mixed setting where you do both inpatient and outpatient?
Absolutely. So especially in an academic institution, you can kind of mix and match what you want your schedule to be like. And of course, like my mentor, who is an outpatient private practice physician, he does inpatient work as well. So he just kind of, you know, one day when he first started his practice, walked into the hospital near his practice and said, "Do you need an inpatient physiatrist?" Right. And so he kind of established that for himself, which is totally possible. Though I would have to say it's probably more common to pick one or the other in PM&R, because you end up finding your niche in what you're really good at. And people that love inpatient, and people that love outpatient don't want to have anything to do with inpatient.
Yeah. Besides like the few freaks on like in family medicine, yeah. It's kind of the same thing too.
Yeah.
I asked this obviously as a joke, but are you a physical therapist?
So that's such a common question. So yeah, I love that you. Yeah, I know. But I love that you brought that up because it's important for anyone listening. No. Obviously you knew that, but so many people don't know that. And the difference is that we practice medicine, you know, as physiatrists. And so I always am careful to say when I start this conversation, that in no way is anything I say meant to put down any other specialties because, you know, and other allied health professionals, because we need our physical therapists, our speech therapists, our rec therapists, occupational therapists, like we could not do our job without them in PM&R. And we definitely work as a team. In fact, that's my favorite part of PM&R is how multidisciplinary we are. But to separate the difference between therapists and the physician, you have to kind of understand that our patients have, you know, very acute medical problems. Sorry, my cat's totally like meowing behind the door. So if you hear that, I don't know how to control him.
That's okay.
You have to remember that our patients are very sick and that's why they're inpatient, at least on the inpatient side. That's why they're inpatient. Otherwise, if they were healthy enough, we would discharge them from the hospital and they would go to therapy outpatient, but that's not the case in this inpatient setting. And so they need very close monitoring. And you can imagine that if you have damage to the brain or the spinal cord, your only deficits are not going to be that you can't talk or that you can't walk. You're going to have, you know, increased risk of diabetes, heart failure, kidney failure. There's a lot of medical comorbidities that go along with injuries like that. And, you know, both in the acute phase and in the chronic phase. And so all of that needs to be overseen by a physician, managed by a physician. That's really where physiatrists come in, is that we're specialists in that rehab medicine, you know, emphasis on the medicine aspect of recovery and rehabilitation.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, it's funny, like you said, unfortunately, people still ask you, are you a physical therapist? The other unfortunate thing is people have no idea about your field. Like first year med students, second year med students, third year med students don't know anything about your field. Why do you think that is?
You know, I don't know, because it's been around for so long. I remember when I first found PM&R, I thought to myself, oh, this must be a really new field, right? It's kind of up and coming, so it must be new. And in fact, it's been around since World War II. So it's definitely not a new field in any sense. But I do think that, you know, maybe it's not seen as a core rotation. And so that's why, because we have to have time, you know, to separate out all of our rotations in medical school. And if you don't, there's just no way for them to put everything, every single specialty in medical school. For example, we do an internal medicine rotation, but we don't necessarily, not everyone does like a cardiology, pulmonology, right? We don't always go into the specialties unless that's an elective or something that you have time for. But that's kind of why I see maybe PM&R not being so commonly known, is because in med school, that rotation is not common unless you do an elective like I did, or like people do when they're interested in it or happen to have be at an institution that has that program.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, it's unfortunate because it's such a great field. It was definitely one of my like top three, especially early on in med school. The only reason I didn't go that route is because I want to do sports med, and I was advised by people in sports med that it's better to go family. But and also I didn't want to do 4 years plus a fellowship. But I ended up transferring residencies pretty recently, which added 6 more months. So I could have just done PM&R and been done in 4 and then plus 1, but you know, it's all good.
Yeah. I mean, and we all have our different, you know, routes to where we want to go. So I think going family medicine is a great route to sports medicine. And I actually think that this is a large area of confusion for pre-meds and medical students, not realizing that you can take multiple paths to the same, you know, destination or same, you know, end career. For example, pain management, right, is another one. You can go into pain from PM&R, you can go into pain from anesthesia, internal medicine, and similar with sports medicine. Like you said, you can go PM&R, family medicine, internal medicine. So there's different routes to get to where you want. And I would definitely encourage any pre-meds or med students to think about that and take that into consideration when they're thinking about their end goal, because there's not just one way to do things.
You're absolutely right. And the problem is, I think it's just access to that information. You might rotate with one internal medicine doctor and they have no idea what they're talking about of anything outside their little realm. So it's, you ask them, how would I get into, you know, XYZ? And they're going to say, oh, you have no shot, or you have to do something that might not necessarily be the only way. And that's kind of the, one of the many limitations about medical school in general, I think.
I totally agree. And I also think that, you know, people are only going to tell you what they know or what they've experienced. And so having multiple point of views and talking to a lot of different people will really serve, you know, you well as a pre-med or a med student.
So one of the things I did when I was on internal as a med student was I went to the rehab floor and I just asked, can I speak to the PM&R doc? And it was awesome. It was a great guy. And then the other time I went, it was this really nice lady. It was just really cool. I like the in-hab rehab facility, the inpatient rehab facility at the hospital. It's always got all the tools, all the workstations. I love it.
Yeah, it is a really cool place. And I love that you said that you did that, because so many people, especially in academic medicine, want to help, want to mentor, and want to teach. I think, you know, I'm definitely someone who's been guilty of this, thought to myself, I don't want to bother someone or I don't want to interrupt somebody's day. But if we take a step back and think about ourselves, right? If a med student or a pre-med student comes up to me and asks me a question, I want to help. And even if I don't have time right then and there, I'll tell them like, hey, right now I'm really busy, but let's talk more about this another time. And so I think when I put myself in their shoes and realized that I want to help people, so they likely want to help me, that kind of helped me free up that mental block of like, I don't want to reach out or I don't want to ask for mentorship, you know, because so many people want to help you and mentorship is invaluable. Like it'll help you get to everywhere that you, you know, you can't see those paths yet because you don't know all that information yet.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think I would advise anyone, especially a med student or even a pre-med, just ask. Even if someone looks like they're just the least approachable person ever, go for it. The worst they can do is be mean to you, but like that's going to happen no matter what down your road. So you might as well at least try to get some knowledge out of it.
Yeah, for sure. And then you know what? If you ask an attending or something for help and they're mean to you, then you just don't ask them for a letter, Breck.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, my mic cut out right there. But yeah, 100%. Just stay away from them. When it's
just stay away from them.
Yeah, 100%. That's funny. So I wanted to ask two specialties options. You mentioned a couple, like I know we can do sports, you could do pain. Any other like fellowship options or even just kind of real specific niches within PM&R?
Yeah. So yeah, we mentioned sports and pain. There's also like interventional spine, which is very similar to pain management, except you focus more on like the axial injections, you know, fluoroscopy injections in the spine, things like that. But there's also like more, I guess, unknown fellowships, which include things like cancer rehab. So you can get really specific within PM&R, though not all of the fellowships are going to be, like, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm looking, not ACGME, like, or accredited is the word I'm looking for. They're not all accredited. Some of them, like cancer rehab, are just to get more exposure to that specific population. So I have a attending who is cancer rehab fellowship trained at my institution here in San Antonio. And he will be the first one to say, you know, if you can get a ton of exposure to that patient population, then you don't necessarily need a fellowship. But most people need a fellowship if they want to do that because they just aren't going to get the volume of exposure to cancer patients, right? So there are fellowships like that where it just gives you a very large exposure to certain patient populations if you want to work with those. And then other, you know, accredited fellowships would include like brain injury and spinal cord injury, which are pretty common in PM&R, especially people tend to fall in love with certain patient populations and love helping certain patient populations. So if that's you, then you can kind of further narrow your scope of treatment in PM&R.
That's awesome, by the way, but you mentioned something that reminded me, I used to work at the Miami Project to cure paralysis. I did research mm-hmm. there for a couple of years, and a lot of the docs there were PM&R docs. And that was kind of my first exposure where I met them. And like you said, fall in love with a certain population, like spinal cord injury, TBIs, yeah. Things like that. It's a really cool, well, TBIs and SCIs aren't cool, but that's a really fascinating yeah. area of medicine overall. You can really just kind of go crazy.
Yeah. And there's so much to know, like within each of those fields. So it's so funny. I joke with my attendings a lot that, you know, we change rotation. So I'll be like on, like right now I'm in outpatient spinal cord and there's so many things that like I have to brush up on because I was really good at and knew like the back of my hand. And then I went and did like a, you know, polytrauma rotation for a month. And then I come back to spinal cord injury and I'm feeling like, oh my goodness, I forgot so much about spinal cord injury. So that's really the beauty in, you know, going to a fellowship and kind of narrowing your field or your scope, because then you just get to dig really, really deep into one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of another question I wanted to ask is, you as a resident or a PM&R resident in general, what are some of the daily or common cases that you're seeing? What are some of the really common pathologies that you see?
So I'd say the most common are going to be like brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, and then orthopedic injuries like hip fractures, you know, knee replacements, things like that. Those are definitely the most common. But we also see neurologic disorders like, you know, MS or like different autoimmune disorders and cauda equina, you know, very, very niche injuries within those larger categories, and can really treat anything that that impairs somebody's function. So sometimes we'll get a patient that doesn't necessarily have a common rehab diagnosis, but they need rehab, right? Sometimes it's just what we call debility. Like they've been in the hospital for an extended period of time. For an example, you know, COVID has been really big, obviously, in the past couple of years. And we'll have patients who have been, you know, in the ICU and then downgraded to the medical floor, but their total hospital stay has been weeks or months long. So they get out and they've got what we call critical illness myopathy, where their muscles have just kind of wasted away in simple terms. And we have to get them back on their feet and stronger. So those are pretty much our most common, I would say, diagnoses that we see.
Critical illness myopathy. I like that a lot. Can I use that when I'm on inpatient? For I have like
you can definitely use that. Yeah, you'll like sound really smart.
Yeah, like instead of failure to thrive or like you know, like cachexia or whatever, which is just kind of a symptom. Like, what is it? Critical illness myopathy?
Yeah,
I love that. I'm using that for sure.
Yeah, it sounds better than just like debility or.
It sounds way more medical and makes a resident sound awesome.
Exactly. You can maybe like pimp someone on that.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be like, oh, attending, have you heard about this critical illness myopathy? So they'll love that, I'm sure. What about kind of another question I wanted to ask is, you're 2 years in, almost a third year. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
What about when you started versus now? What are some adjustments you've had to make and kind of changes you've seen in yourself as a practitioner?
Yeah. So I'd say for sure my confidence has improved throughout residency. You know, you start residency, you still feel like a med student. Like I remember my very first day on, I was on internal medicine because our first year of PM&R is general. And I remember my upper level telling me, Nicolette, just check all of their labs and replace, you know, any of the, like, feel free to replace any vitamins, minerals, things like that. And I remember looking at him and saying, you have to be more specific than that. Like, I literally cannot just look at this patient's chart and just start prescribing like vitamins and minerals. And it seemed so complicated, and how that sounds ridiculous even saying that, but that's the truth. Like, I remember the first day of residency just feeling like every order I put in like was dangerous, right? Like I just didn't feel comfortable at all. You know, fast forward to 2 years later and I take 24-hour call, you know, by myself, of course, with backup. I always have a backup resident and a backup attending that are always available for me if I need them. But you just kind of trust yourself more, I think, as you go through residency, and you get really good at learning what you know and what you don't know and how to know when to reach out for help. Because even as attendings, we're going, you know, when we're there, we're going to need help. You can't always do things on your own, or there's always going to be something that comes up that maybe you're not completely up to date with, or maybe someone else is just more of a specialist in that than you are. And you're going to need to know your boundaries and when to reach out. So I think, you know, the number one thing for in residency for me has kind of been growing that self-awareness and self-confidence. But I'd also say, kind of, you know, going back to what I said before, I don't think any of us really know what we want to do until we try it out. And that happened for me in med school, where I thought I wanted to go into OBGYN and then ended up going into PM&R. And the same happened when I got into residency, thinking I wanted to do outpatient and then now deciding I want to do inpatient. So I think it's just the whole journey in medicine is such a learning experience, and we're constantly being forced out of our comfort zone and have to learn about ourselves. So it's interesting.
Yes, indeed. I 100% agree with that. And that's awesome. It's cool to hear, you know, you're growing, obviously, as a practitioner. Everyone's going to get more skill more rapidly or more easy. What am I trying to say? More ability to rapidly access information. But you're also growing as a person, as a doctor, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, I bet. Let's see. What about kind of, you mentioned 24-hour call. That's in the hospital, I'm assuming?
Yes. It is considered in-house call because we do have to sleep at the hospital. But we are allowed to go home if we live within 30 minutes of the hospital during the day, which is nice. So, you know, I can spend the day with my husband or, you know, hang out with a friend as long as I'm close to the hospital and everything is okay, you know, on the inpatient side. And then at like 6 p.m., I will go into the hospital and then sleep there just in case anything happens overnight. Yeah. We cover 3 inpatient units when we're on call at my hospital. And that's general inpatient rehab. That's brain injury, which is also, it's the polytrauma unit, but pretty much everyone in polytrauma has a brain injury, and then the spinal cord unit. So those big 3 categories of inpatient is what we cover. We carry 3 pagers for 24 hours.
3 pagers, woof.
Yeah. still use pagers to all the medicine or med students and pre-med
students. Oh my God. So at my previous program, we still use pagers, but we also did like the phone paging system. So you might get blown up on your phone and then get like 3 pages at the same time, depending on the floor. Like every floor and unit had different procedures.
Oh my gosh. That's even worse. I'd rather them just stay consistent.
Yeah, it was bad. The other question I wanted to ask, you're inpatient. What are consults that you're like, nice? And what are consults that you get where you roll your eyes?
So in PM&R, I kind of expect most people not to know exactly maybe what they want from PM&R. Because I know that people know what cardiology is. They know what nephrology is, right? They know when, for the most part, they know when to consult those specialties, but they don't always know when to consult PM&R. So I'm usually very forgiving. But one time that I am a little bit, I'd say irritated, is when I get consults that are just like very highly inappropriate. I'll give you an example. I got called once from a service, and I'm going to try to be as not specific as possible so that I don't call anyone out, but from a surgical specialty, and they asked me to see the patient. So I was kind of getting a history and asking, you know, when did this patient have surgery? And they mentioned, oh, well, they're in surgery right now. And you know, that I feel like is a little bit like, you don't even know how your patient is after surgery and you're consulting, right? So you can't actually know what you're consulting for if the patient hasn't even come out of surgery, if they're still under the knife, right?
Yeah.
There's no way, you know, they wanted a consult for inpatient rehab to see if the patient could go to inpatient rehab. but the patient was still under the knife, like actively under anesthesia in the OR. And so those are really the consults, like when it's just, I feel like obviously inappropriate, like, this is just, there's no way you could even give me an accurate physical exam right now about this patient. Right. Yeah. Otherwise, like sometimes we'll get consults and they'll ask if a patient is ready for inpatient rehab, or maybe they want help with a patient's agitation, their neurogenic bowel, their neurogenic bladder. And even if it's not like something we can help with, which all of those things we can, everything I just listed, we can. But even if they do ask us something that we can't help with, I have no problem just going to see the patient. And then usually I'll have something I can add. even if it's not what they asked for. And so usually some I'll call them and say, you know, I went to go see Mr. Bob, you know, but we can't really help with XYZ. However, I did notice that one thing that might help him recover is this, right? And that is something that I think is really unique to PM&R is we usually have something to add because everyone is really trying to recover when they're in the hospital. Even if they're acutely sick, there's always things that could help them, help their recovery along. And so sometimes we just have recommendations that maybe the primary team wouldn't have thought to ask. So yeah, I wouldn't say there's anything that I don't like, but there are definitely highly inappropriate consults that we get.
Okay. Yeah, that was kind of what I meant. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
You got to appreciate how proactive that one person was being though. I mean, we want to know if he can go to rehab as soon as he gets out of surgery.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never seen that much proactive activity.
You know, it was a Friday afternoon, so they needed the patient gone.
Yeah, exactly. Friday afternoon, got to get out of here. That's hilarious. So 2 years in, what are maybe a couple of your favorite cases that you've had and maybe some of the most difficult cases?
So I can definitely tell you my favorite case happened within, you know, the past 6 months. I was on a pediatric rehab service and one of my patients had a brain injury. And, you know, of course, again, I have to be really nonspecific, but he was in a coma, you know, he was in a minimally conscious state and his eyes were closed. He was not talking to us, opening his eyes, making any purposeful movements. So every day I kind of got used to just walking in there and I'd say his name and greet him and ask how he was doing, knowing that he wouldn't, you know, he's not expecting any response or him opening his eyes or anything. And one day as I'm putting on my hand sanitizer and I say my normal greeting to him, he opens his eyes and looks at me and he says, "I'm doing good." And, you know, this is like 2 weeks in with him in, you know, basically in a coma. And I, of course, looked like I probably saw a ghost. He thought I was nuts because he's looking at my face like, "What is wrong? Like, what are you worried about?" You know?
Yeah.
And I just tell him, you know, "I haven't heard your voice and I have ever seen you with your eyes open. You know, I've met you when you were, you know, not responsive." And he says to me, "Well, you know, I've just been asleep for 2 weeks and 4 days." And it's like he had been counting. Like I couldn't understand. I still to this day don't understand how he just knew that number. Like he just knew 2 weeks and 4 days. Like it's okay. I've just been asleep for 2 weeks and 4 days. And of course, he still has deficits. But seeing that kind of, you know, transformation, we didn't have him in a medically induced coma. You know, we didn't have medications on board keeping him asleep. That was just his brain injury, you know, keeping him basically asleep. Not getting into all the medical details because no one will understand all the other labels that I put on it. But that is probably my favorite case recently, just because that was the first time I'd ever seen somebody like truly wake up, what we would say emerge from, you know, from their disorder of consciousness. So, and then I think the other question was like least favorite. I have
most
to say,
difficult. Yeah, something like
okay,
that.
Okay. Most difficult. I would say, so I agree. I wouldn't say there's a least favorite, but some of the most difficult, like aspects, I guess, are we have these outpatient spinal cord injury annual exams and they take about 2 hours. And that's definitely the most difficult because you're basically redoing the patient's entire physical exam. We have this very complicated spinal cord injury exam called the ASIA exam. It does not stand for the country. It stands for American Spinal Injury Association. And you test every, you know, pinprick, light touch, and myotome on the patient's entire body. And then you go through all of their screening for the, you know, their preventative diseases and everything. So it's a long appointment. Those have got to be the most, I would say, time consuming and most difficult encounters so far in residency.
Yeah, that checks out. That definitely checks out. I wanted to go back to the kind of thing you said you wanted to not get in detail to about the brain in the comatose state. I want to hear about that.
So, basically there are different levels of brain injury. And so we call them the disorders of consciousness, but you pretty much can have somebody who's in a minimally conscious state, a vegetative state, or a coma. And there's varying physical exam findings that can indicate which kind of level of disorder of consciousness they are in, if that makes sense. So the, I guess, least severe would be a minimally conscious state, and then the most severe would be a coma. We kind of generally, like, to in layman's terms, could refer to all of those as a coma, and that's likely what patients see, or patient or family members of patients see is oh, they're in a coma, but they may be any of those, within that spectrum, if that makes sense. And so that's kind of what I mean when I say I'm not going to get into it, because it's like, well, he wasn't technically in a coma, but no one would understand if I'm like, he's in a minimally conscious state. And so, yeah.
Okay. Got you. I think most of the people who listen are in healthcare already, probably residency or above, maybe medical school or graduate school, but I wouldn't know the differences. That's pretty interesting. I wanted to hear your opinion too. Like, what do you think is going on in the brain in that particular state for the kid to be able to recognize exact amount of time? Is that kind of an anomaly, or is there Do we understand that yet?
So I definitely do not know that answer, and I don't know if my, any of my attendings do either. The brain is still a very heavily researched area of medicine, and so much of brain injury medicine, even talking, with a lot of the fellowship trained brain injury physicians that I work with, on my attendings, will say that we have so much research in the field, and we still need so much research in the field. So a lot of what we do is based off of, many, many case studies that have been shown to be successful, but that we don't necessarily know the exact, like, physiology or pathology behind it. We obviously know that there are areas of the brain that do certain things, right? And we know, like, okay, generally, if you have an injury in this area of the brain, you'll have these deficits. But most of the time in a brain injury patient, you will see kind of a blurred picture that doesn't exactly fit the textbook description. So that's why brain injury patients are so difficult, is because they don't, most of the time, they don't fit the textbook. And most of the time, you're dealing with things that we don't have a lot of research on. We maybe have case studies on these things, and we have case studies that show certain treatments have helped, but we don't have, hardcore data on a lot of it. For example, like, the first thing that comes to my head is that we use amantadine a lot in brain injury patients. And this drug, actually, like, we don't even really know why it works to maybe promote wakefulness in brain injury patients, but it's one that a lot of case studies show works. So just, there's a lot of gray area, pun intended, in brain injury.
Nice. Okay. I like that. I like that. It took me a second. I like that. That's a doctor dad joke
Definitely a
right there.
medicine. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
definitely a medicine joke.
Yeah. So that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that insight into PM&R. I think it's a great field, and you definitely made a rocking choice, so that's awesome. I want to know, what is your ideal career? Like, you're 10 years down the road from now, what does your day look like?
That's a great question. I think my ideal career would be an inpatient rehab unit. I don't think I would want to be like medical director or anything in admin. I think I just want my day to be filled with medicine. Honestly, I just love, you know, being with my patients and actually like doing medicine. I have learned to not so much love all of the paperwork and stuff associated, which obviously that's inevitable. We've got a chart, we've got to make notes, but I would like to spend most of my day at bedside with my patients and watching how they do in therapy and making sure that my medical management is helping them improve as much as possible. And so for that, I think I would just want to be inpatient. I used to think of myself as somebody who would want to be like on this committee and that committee and going to all these conferences and speaking and giving presentations and doing all this research. And I think as I've gotten further into my career, I realized the value in being committed to one thing, and really like putting all of your energy into one or a couple of things. And that's really how I feel like I make the most of a difference. And so, although it may just sound simple, that's really what I see my future in my career being, is just being a inpatient rehabilitation medicine physician, going to work every day, doing that, and then going home and spending time with my husband and my hopefully future kids.
I hear that 100%. Everyone's got to have their own thing. Some people, like you said, can handle being gone 90 hours a week, 100 hours a week. Can't be me though. Can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, how sometimes that changes, because if you would have asked me 4 years ago, I'd be like, you know, I'm going to be president of AOC PM&R and I'm going to be giving conference presentations and getting grants for research. And that would have been my answer. Right. And my perspective, I think, has changed on life. And I just want to be a really good doctor to my patients. And then I also want to be a really good wife and future mother, you know?
100%. Yeah. If you asked me, but right before med school,
yeah,
I wanted to be a trauma surgeon. And then
nice.
I got into med school and studied 400,000 hours a day. And I was like, all right, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. Yeah, life does changes, change.
So. Speaking of that, congrats on the wedding and the marriage.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Did I cut you off? Were you getting ready to say something else?
I was going to ask you if I could flip the interview around and ask you the Please. Same question, if, you know, where you see yourself in 10 years.
So my ideal setting, being in family med residency, I kind of keep it to myself sometimes because mm-hmm. some of the attendings don't like it. They all right. The kind of stereotype of family medicine is we're going to do everything. We're going to help everyone, no matter what cost to us, you know? I definitely respect that and want that kind of patient, that kind of care for like my mom, for example, but I just don't have that capacity in me. I really want a niche and I want to do sports med. I want to do athletic performance research and return to play protocol research and concussion research. And then I also just want to do like athletic performance and ways to optimize performance. So a combination of sports med and kind of strength conditioning.
I love that. That's awesome.
That is the plan. That's what I'm working towards. And
yeah,
kind of have to probably open up my own practice either through a university that where I can do the research, or as part of a university to do research, or kind of my own independent practice associated with it for the research aspect.
Yeah. Well, I know any future med students and residents would love to be learning under you. So you being associated with academic institution would be a wonderful thing.
I think it would be really fun to teach either like an advanced undergrad course or a med school course, but like a longitudinal med school course. Like I hated those teachers that were really good, but they taught you 1 hour ever, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Maybe that's a blessing. If I'm not as good of a teacher as I think I could be, the kids probably will get tired of me. So 1 hour is enough.
You can try it out and then base your commitment off of how you feel.
Yeah,
exactly. If you reach out in 10 years and I'm on a bunch of committees hiding from practicing, you know it. I went wrong. So,
That's hilarious.
but yeah, that's kind of it, I think. And so I get a lot of flack from that, especially at my last program, about that. But the new place is very much supportive of that and kind of giving me the opportunities to do sports as much as possible. You know, I have my baseline obligations of family med, and that's things I need to know because of if I have a athlete's family I got to take care of, or a sick
Of
kid comes
course.
in, I need to know what's going on. But I do have my own niche that I want to build, and you know, I like the new program is very supportive of that.
That's wonderful. And I'm glad you found a program that was supportive of you. I think there's a lot of like a lack of knowledge about the fact that you can switch residency programs. And so, you know, I just had my best friend just did the same thing. She'll actually be moving to the same town as me now. And so I think it's awesome that you were able to find a program that really just fit your needs.
Yeah, and I didn't know this, but I think it was the data was like a third of residents don't finish where they started.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't know it was a third.
Yeah, and I still stayed in family med, but a lot of people will transfer, you know, specialties.
Yeah.
Where I'm now in my class, there's three of us that are like randoms. So I transferred in. I started in January. There's one person who did a year of gen surg, and they were like, "This is not it." And then another one, I forget what they were from. And then we had one person leave and go to neuro residency.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people changing all the time. And that's like never talked about. I feel like at least it was never talked about when I was a med student.
It's probably discouraged because I think it definitely doesn't look good for the program where you leave. But, you know, it is what it is.
And we're
So,
human, you know?
yeah, that's true. I also have been following your TikTok glow up. Tell me about that.
I guess so. Are you saying like now I'm more active on TikTok, huh? I do really enjoy social media and just like not just teaching and educating, but also just having fun and connecting with people on social media. And so I have been taking social media a lot more seriously the past year, and it's really allowed me to make a bunch of connections, mentor a lot of people. And also turn it into a little bit of a side hustle, make some money and everything. Where I originally didn't know how I felt about that, right? But at the end of the day, I realized it was a really great opportunity because I am able to be compensated by brands to help other med students. So my education is completely free to every follower on my platform, or across all my platforms. I never charge my followers for anything. But I also am able to get compensated for my time through brands. And so that is a really cool situation to be in, I think. And so that's kind of why I started taking my social media really seriously over the past year, because I realized I could do so much good providing so much free information and education while also having fun, making connections, and making a little bit of money.
So I'm a
Well,
fan,
thank you.
definitely, and I'm happy for the
Thanks.
glow up.
Yeah.
So what else? Any other updates? Any other things going on in life?
I think that's it. I guess the only other personal update is that my husband, who was 2.5 hours away in residency, has now signed his attending physician contract and is moving to me in San Antonio next month.
Nice. You know,
Yeah.
that's hilarious because my partner is literally 2.5 hours away right now.
Really?
Yeah, and that's exact distance. That sucks.
That's so funny. Like, what a coincidence. But
I know, right?
It's nice to be able to drive. I have to say, we're really lucky that we don't have to fly, but still, like any amount of long distance is just difficult. Like you can't, I'm definitely not one of those people that's like, I love that I have my own time. I'm like, no, the reason I'm with this person is because I want to be with them. Like I don't want to be 2.5 hours away.
Yeah, exactly. It's not great. Like we were long distance very early on, and then we were together, like living together for several years, and then now we're back apart, which I think that's the worst.
Yeah.
you have the real life experience, and then you have to go back. That sucks.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you guys have a timeline of when you're gonna your long distance will end?
So she's in PT school. She'll finish next year, and then I'll still. We were supposed to finish at the same time, but my transfer added 6 months, so kind of don't know what that little time is gonna look like. And then I'll have 6 months between when I finish and starting fellowship. So kind of just figure it out. But fellowship on 100% will be together, but don't know about the little interim.
Yeah. Well, you guys will figure it out, and it's exciting just kind of moving forward in life and getting closer to that time where you can just be together.
What residency is your husband doing?
He is finishing internal medicine residency, and his attending job is a general hospitalist.
Lame. No, I'm just joking.
That's he awesome. Is a horrible consult. We realized that. So he cannot just focus on one thing. Like he, when every time he's on a specialty rotation in residency, he's like, yeah, but I realize they're doing everything else wrong. And like, I need to fix all these other things. And it's like, no, you're just supposed to be focused on the heart. And he's like, no, but I can't. Like, there's all this other stuff that I have to fix. So he realized pretty early on that he needs to be primary, and that he really does so good as the primary. And so, yeah, we're really excited about it.
Sweet. And so he'll finish like June start, I guess, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think actually he has the last week of the like academic year off so that he can move and stuff. So end of June, he'll be over here with me.
Nice. Right on. So that's awesome. That's a good update. I like that for you.
Yeah, me too.
Of course. So, you know, I didn't get a chance to listen to our old episode before this. I meant to just to go over the last, like the rapid fire questions. But I do want to ask now that you're here, what do you feel like kind of keys to success in medicine?
Keys to success in medicine. So just taking this, my own interpretation of the question, I think the number one important thing is to keep your own hobbies and interests outside of medicine. And it's funny because I know the question is about medicine, but I think if we lose ourselves, whether that be from burnout or just from completely identifying as a physician or a med student or a pre-med, then we really can't offer our patients or our education, you know, all of our energy. So I think that's really important is to keep at least something. You know, there's times in the training that gets really difficult, and I'm not going to pretend like that's not difficult to do, but it's super important to schedule in time for your hobbies or really anything that makes you feel like you, makes you feel like a human outside of medicine. And I would say kind of the second thing is learning to trust yourself and know your boundaries, kind of like we talked about earlier, knowing when to ask someone for help above you, no matter where you are, whether you're a pre-med all the way up to an attending, you know, learning your boundaries, but also learning to trust yourself and challenge yourself a little bit and be comfortable being uncomfortable. And I may have even said that on the last episode. I don't even remember. But that's something I say and think all the time is that we've got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And what I mean by that is being out of your comfort zone is good and is, you know, is going to stimulate growth. And so just knowing that when we feel that way, when we feel out of our comfort zone, just sitting with it and pushing through it, because that's really what's going to make you, you know, grow in your career.
I think you did say that last time. I'm almost 100% sure you said that. And it's awesome then and it's awesome now. So I totally agree. Like you said, you can't give patients anything if, you know, what the patients need is a human, and if all you are is a doctor, then you can't relate because you're not a human. So
exactly.
Look after yourself. Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Sweet. Well, you know, I know you're a busy lady. You got a lot going on. Your cat's going to tear your door down. So I will let you.
I think he gave up.
Good. What a quitter. But yeah, that's awesome. So I think this was awesome catching up with you. I'll be watching the TikToks, and, you know, I'm a little bit bogged down right now with like rotations, but I'm going to try to get this out within a week. So I'll keep you posted.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it was great chatting with you, and thanks for having me again.
Right on. Well, we'll have to do another episode in a year or two and just see how everything's progressing.
That'd be great.
All right. That was Dr. Nicolette Finger, second year physiatry, aka PM&R resident. I just want to thank everyone for tuning in. I want to thank everyone for sharing and being a part of the family. And as usual, to those in the game and those on their way up, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you.